Let's set the table here a little bit. There is a debate going on in Western North Dakota. The debate really is not focused on whether or not the need for additional power is there. That's the one thing everybody agrees on. That's the one thing that everybody agrees on. The debate is really based on how to get the power to where it needs to go. Kurt Pearson is here. He's the manager of media and community for Basin, but also here with Basin Electric Power Cooperative is a man I've known for a number of years. And I'm full disclosure here, we work very closely together, and I have a lot of respect for him, and I want to get his take on all of this. That's why I called him, and that's Steve Tomac. Steve, good to have you on News and Views.
Joel, it's great to be here, and we also have a couple other people in the room, but you know, primarily, so Mary Miller is here and Aaron Huntemer is here too. We happen to be in the area.
You bring staff, man. You got people.
This is a big issue
too. You go into an alley, you got backup. Let me tell you.
I learned that from you, Joel. You want to pick a fight with, get in a barroom fight here. And that's kind of what this Izzern guy did.
This Professor Izzern from NDSU.
Yep.
It is going around saying that your sighting of that power line through Killdeer Mountains, and I'm going to just say this to you, Steve. I've read the articles. That's what prompted my phone call to you. He's saying you bought off the Historical Society.
Well, he's not only saying that, Joel. He's also saying that we deliberately omitted, essentially we lied about something that was in a report that we had to file. So, you know, what really bothers
us... Okay, let me say this. Did you?
No. It's hogwash. It is, pure and simple.
Okay.
And so this all gets in a forum article on Sunday 10 days ago, and then the forum repeated it in their editorial, and the two points that struck out at us are that we deliberately omitted, we had some deception... that we admitted this out of our cultural heritage report that we needed to file, and beyond that we muzzled the State Historical Society because of a contribution that we made. And you know what? Co-ops proudly made the contribution to the State Historical Society in 2008.
Long before this
ever showed up. Okay. And so we made a $1.3 million commitment. This was back in the 2007.
In 2008, you didn't know about the line going through where this is controversial now. This wasn't done in anticipation of, boy, we better suck up to Historical Society here.
No, Joel, in 2008, was oil development in Western North Dakota even on your radar?
It was, but it wasn't in the Killdeer Mountain area. You could see Williston was picking up.
It really wasn't being developed anywhere out there. And so, you know, this
I just make that argument because I want the state to send more money back. In 2008, they're already busting with money, but I get your point. So let's describe to people the project. Where are you taking power from, and where are you sending it to?
Well, here's our challenge. Our challenge out there is this, and again, this is more of a symptom than a problem out there. I mean, Basin Electric is the challenge that we have with siting this line is out there. But essentially what we're doing is 191-mile, 345 kV line. It runs from our Antelope Valley Station north of Beulah, and it goes over to the Charlie Creek Substation, which is west of Killdeer, right on Highway U.S. Highway 85. And north up into Williston, around the west side of the lake, and then back over to the Tioga area. That's kind of the general sense of where this line goes.
So you're taking power from Beulah, you're shipping it over to Killdeer, and then you're heading it north.
That's right.
And you're serving a need up in Williston that is very much there, in that and the Tioga area.
Well, that goes back to our KLJ study that we completed in the fall of 2012, which showed that we are 1,000 to 1,200 megawatts short up in that area by 2025. And you don't do this all in one night of coverage. And so our approach to this is, one, we're building some peaking generation in the area. We've got six small peakers, 45-megawatt peakers, that are going into the area. Two of them are online now. And that fills the need as we get this transmission line developed. And then we're also looking at a larger generation facility somewhere we presumably in that area to fuel that area. So we really have a three-pronged approach to meet that need that we have by 2025. But intermediate steps to provide reliability and redundancy into the area, we need a transmission line.
Okay, so we described physically what you need to build. Now let's talk about where and why you feel you need to build it where your siting is at now. Okay, the dispute here is that this transmission line is going to go through a Civil War era battlefield, and that it's going to have way too big of a footprint, and it's going to lose its historic value. Will it?
Well, I don't think it will. I mean, you always have those kinds of pressures. But first of all, let's talk about the siting and the corridor of the line. Your basic premise here is that why didn't you just move the dang line, Steve?
Thoughts come to mind. I mean, there's some state highways and some other things there. I mean, it does provoke that thought.
You know, and it's easier said than done. You know, we've been working on this since 2011. We started this process and figuring out, okay, where's the best way to serve this? How do we get additional transmission, additional electricity into the area? How do we do this? How do we do that? So we've had some planning process and boots on the ground since late 2011 and 2012 as we move through this process. And so, but you got to realize that area up there, Joel, it's speckled and dotted with tribal land, Forest Service land, the National Park Service. Of course, you got Teddy Roosevelt on the west. And so it isn't just an easy deal to say, well, move it this way 5 miles, that way 5 miles, or whatever. And so this is not an easy process to move that. And so the other thing that people have to realize, the corridor that we ultimately picked after we tested something further south, closer to the highway, and we looked at other options, the corridor that we actually picked is primarily cultivated, developed land as you go through that.
That you're looking to put this line in has been disturbed. The land has been disturbed?
Much of it has. And as a matter of fact, in the study corridor that Professor Izzern talks about in his study, there are already 26 existing oil wells right in there. There's two utility stations, communications towers, gravel pits, stock dams, and all kinds of things right through this area. So it isn't like it's pristine. It's not a pristine area in the corridor that we picked that goes through this study area.
Okay, is he credible? Is he coming? And what matters to me, I mean, he gets to have an opinion just like I do and you do. I understand that. And the man is a historian, and he's director of the Center for Cultural Heritage Renewal at NDSU. When you tag NDSU onto the back of something like that, that gives you the power of not only an institution you attended, but one with a pretty good football team. Now you got everybody's attention, right?
Well,
I mean,
we can't dispute two of those things.
Right.
One, I'm a graduate of NDSU, and number two is the fact that they got a hell of a football team.
But I want to go to the arguments he's making, because this is Basin Electric is a group. Full disclosure here, we have done business together. You're on my cruiser that I travel all over this state with, and I'm proud of that. And I'm proud of what Basin has done to electrify a rural area that there wasn't a whole lot of money in doing it. And I'm glad my rate stays where it's at. There's my disclaimer. But that being said, he's saying that the donation to the Historical Society, the omission and all of this, shows collusion, that you're not doing your due diligence for the public, and that the public needs to know more about this.
You know, I think that's a very appropriate question to ask the State Historical Society, because they're the ones that would need to comment on this in the process that we've went through. Joel, let's talk about this process that he seems to draw some erroneous conclusions about. So we hire a consultant. We hire this consultant that goes through this process and of where we think the line might go as we try to pick the right corridor to go weave through all of these obstacles that we have to. And what we're really trying to do is find a balance between public interest and private ownership. And it's a delicate balance because it's a NIMBY approach, not in my backyard. And so this is really a hard issue when you try to get this done.
I saw it here with the XL line.
I mean, it's a dance. And so as we try to find the best solution and the best balance between public and private partnerships here, as we move forward, we hit all of these things. So we hire a consultant to say, under our agreement and under our federal environmental impact statement, we need to identify all Class 1 protection areas. So our consultant goes out there and he looks through and does a good job of identifying Class 1 protection areas, of writing that report. Izzern's point is, part of his point is, but you omitted to say anything about the Killdeer Mountain battlefield. If he'd have stopped there, I would have had to say, you know, you got a point. You got a point. Maybe we could have, even though it's not a Class 1 area. Wasn't then, still isn't.
What defines now, a Class 1 area?
Well, so Class 1 area is a level of protection that deserves, and to be honest with you, I'm not sure if Kurt can answer that or not. But
so it better be Gettysburg to be a Class 1.
It's pretty much. And so the Killdeer Mountain battlefield hasn't reached that and probably, perhaps, never will. We don't know. But it wasn't when our consultant did the research. It still doesn't. Even though there's a grant now where Professor Izzern can study this. And so it wasn't identified in our environmental impact.
But he didn't stop on that. He didn't stop on the battlefield.
Izzern didn't?
Yeah, he didn't. He took it even further.
He took it further. He said, you guys are lying. You deliberately omitted it out of the report. And no, we didn't. What our job was is to identify the Class 1 protection areas, which we did in the report, and then we moved on. Could we have mentioned it? Well, yes, we probably could have. But, you know, Izzern isn't without fault here either, because there were a series of scoping meetings and public input meetings that were held in early 13 and late 13. And interestingly enough, no one, Izzern, who had went to the legislature in early 2013, asked for an appropriation so that he could study the battlefield, was denied by the North Dakota State Legislature for any monies to do this, then apparently applied for a grant which became public in late August, and that's when we got to know about, or we learned about, his attempts to study this and figure out, okay, where the battlefield happened and the historical importance of the area. And so that's kind of the timeline as we know it. He's accusing us of deliberately omitting this. That's totally wrong, totally hogwash. As for his point about the State Historical Society, that's pure and simple. That happened in 2008. That was a generous commitment by the rural electric co-ops, and part of our core values and our commitment and our cooperative principles is commitment to community. And so that's just part of the thing we do as co-ops.
Well, I don't know that I've had some dealings with the Historical Society in North Dakota, and I'm not sure that they can be bought off. I think that there's as much as what he's accusing you of, I think that he's also accusing the Historical Society of something that isn't all that fair. I know these people. I know the people that serve on it, and I'm just not there on that. So if he was here, I would tell him that. And he's welcome, by the way, to be here. When we come back, Steve, what I want to know is, what does it look like? What does the transmission look like? Okay. I think that for the public who are listening, who don't live in your world, in the kilowatt world, they're going to want to know how intrusive this is on what they consider to be a pristine area of North Dakota. So stick around. Steve Tomac, Basin Electric Power Cooperative, line through the Killdeer Mountain area. Basically, we're talking about how to get power up to Williston. That's what we're talking about. We said we're going to take phone calls. Before we get into the description of the line, Steve, let's do it. Let's get as many calls as we can. Claire, you're on with Steve Tomac. Go ahead, Claire.
Well, thank you. I just want to underscore the tremendous need that we have for power out here. It's really critical. Our member consumers have grown accustomed to a reliable power supply and redundancy and safety. And the way it stands today, it's an extremely tight transmission supply. And if the lights go out, we won't be discriminating. You know, it creates chaos and, it's not only oil pumps that would go down, but there could be ranches and homes. So what I'd like to relay regarding the NDSU historian is he needs to remember that this growth is creating jobs, keeping our youth here, and our long dream of energy independence has some hope.
Okay.
And even in these communities like Epping and Arnagard that were dying are now doing booming, and we really need the electric transmission to provide the power if we're growth and homes and ranches and farms and grain driving.
I got you, Claire. He's definitely one on the side. Steve is saying, look, give me the power.
Well, and Claire, this is Claire Vigasa. He manages the Upper Moe transmission area.
Oh, so he knows. Area.
So he has an eye. But Claire, if you would, just take a half.
I let him go. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I clicked him off.
He can answer the question of the need. It isn't just oil wells, Joel. It's residences, it's small businesses, it's everybody up in that area. So the need, the demand isn't coming just from the oil industry.
Sorry about that, Claire, but let me ask you this. Landowners, what are they saying? The people around it, Steve.
Well, here's the interesting thing. As we've sought to find this balance between public and private ownership, as we've sought to find that, you know, our people on the ground, our boots on the ground up there have made over 10,000 landowner contacts, and we've engaged 512 landowners as we've weaved this way all the way from Beulah to west of Killdeer to north to Williston and around the loop there. And so we have got a lot of people on the ground making landowner contacts and doing that.
Well, did the guy from NDSU get the landowners?
I have no knowledge that Izzern has ever made a landowner contact out in.
Okay. Basin Electric Power Cooperatives is with us right now. We're taking your questions and comments about the siting of the new power line through the Killdeer Mountain area. Let's take them in the order they come. Tom, you're on with Steve. Go ahead.
I have a question. Why can't the power line be on the east side of Highway 85? And then I also have a comment when he's done, please.
Okay, sure. Steve?
You know, I don't know that I've got the answer. When you get over to 85, you're at the Charlie Creek substation, and my focus has mostly been on this Killdeer Mountain battlefield. But when you say the east side of 85, I think it is. As it goes north, though, that's a good question, Tom. I have to do some research on that.
What's your comment, Tom?
My comment is this battle site is the major battle between the Lakota Indians and the U.S. during their war, the Plains Wars, leading up to the Battle of the Little Bighorn in Montana. And my idea is that this site should be enhanced for future generations, not diminished. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Thanks for your call.
And so, you know, we don't have any disagreement with that. We have no disagreement that it should be studied or it shouldn't be studied or whether Izzern should do this or should do that. So I'm not sure where the hiccup is on that. Where we get caught crossways with Izzern is that he calls us a liar. He says we're State Historical Society is on the take, but he can study whatever he wants to study. Our read on the historical significance of the area that we're impacting is that most of the battle took place north of that. And it's a pretty amazing read, Joel, if you get a chance. There's a sergeant that did a journal of the battle, the actual battle, and it's a pretty amazing read as to how that happened. But most of the battle and a lot of the activity was up more near the Medicine Hole, which is north of the area that we're putting the
siting area. Yeah. Okay. Let's get to Craig. Craig, you're on News and Views.
Yeah. Craig DeVernick, I'm a rancher from Killdeer. And the 1 acre that the State Historical Society manages here is in the center of my property. Basin's power line goes 3/4 mile south of this. And that 1 acre that the state owns, my grandfather gave that to the state as a memorial back in the 30s. And just some of the comments I'd like to make pertaining to Israel's accusations about Basin not doing a complete study beforehand. He needs to look in the mirror himself because he is guilty of just about everything he's accusing Basin of. And where I come from with that is, I contacted Izzern, and we've seen all these news articles in the paper about his study and proposed study. What the people of North Dakota need to know is he has yet today to put a meeting together with these local ranchers and just give the some insight in what his study would actually involve. So here you got a man that sought out federal tax dollars from the National Park Service to do a study, but has yet to this day sought or felt a need to put the landowners on board from the beginning.
Well, Craig, that question came up earlier. The question came up earlier whether or not Basin has talked to the local landowners. The answer came back to me, yes. And then I asked Steve, I said, well, is your opposition, is Izzern and others doing that? And he said, as far as he knows, no, but he doesn't know for sure. You live there. You're saying yeah. You haven't been contacted.
I have been contacted by Izzern, and the meeting or the phone call I had with him, he was so arrogant and disrespectful that the landowners in this area have informed him that there is no way he'll ever set foot on battlefield ground to do his study.
Okay. Now, because you're so local, I want your take on this. The siting of where it's at now, obviously you understand it better than I. Are you okay with it? Do you think you're going to lose value in what is a historic place if the power lines are sited there?
No.
Okay. Well, that's a direct answer. All right. Thanks, Craig. Steve, we never got to this. Describe to me the physical look of what you're building. I want to know if I drive by there, you know, 5 years afterwards, what's it going to look like?
You know, Joel, some of the concern is raised by the old style, the old lattice four-corner 345 kVs that we used to construct. This is a single
pole. The ones that look like robots.
That's right. The erector set.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
This is not that. This is a single pole structure with 5 to 7 poles every mile. So you got quite a distance between each one. A single pole structure. The base of the pole is roughly 7 feet across, 5 feet across, something like about the size of a small car, a Volkswagen. That's the amount of earth that we're actually going to disturb and put a foundation on. And we're going to go 8 miles across this proposed study area. And again, it's just a proposed study area. The actual core study area where they think the battle took place is just a very small portion of that. It's amazing to me that they want to study 17,000 acres. Do you know how big the Gettysburg battlefield site actually is? In Gettysburg, the National Historic Site there?
You're going to know the exact acreage, but I've been there, so I know.
You have been. Yeah. It's an amazing site.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
It's fantastic. Yes. It's a little over 900 acres.
Yeah, it's not
We're
going to
study, there's 17,000 acres that is in this proposed study area. And so, again, we have no problem with the study if that's what someone wants to do. And our transmission line will not impact the study or the study area, the study whatsoever.
Okay, let's get back to the phone calls. Alan, you're on News and Views. Go ahead, Alan.
Yes, I'm a retired farmer, and a mile and a half of that basin line runs through my property. And many of the opponents, including the Fargo Forum, that's against that power line. None of those people have ever lived without electricity. Yes, I've been. I'm
not trying to make light of what you just said. I would fit into that category too.
But I remember it. I'm 70 some years old, retired, and when Basin approached us to cross our land, it wasn't a yes right away. We consulted an attorney and went through all the rigmarole, and we did. They moved the line once on our property, so we it went farther to the north a little bit, maybe a half a mile. But they've been excellent to work with, and I don't appreciate a publication from the eastern part of the state giving Basin a black eye. They're providing a service for mankind.
Okay.
We need electricity here.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate your phone call. Want to sneak in one last call here. Bob, you're on with Steve Tomac. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, Joel. Thanks.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve. I know that the Public Service Commission has siting processes for electrical generation sites and transmission lines, and that includes looking at exclusion and avoidance areas and public hearings and the like. How far along are you on that process? Have you even begun on any of those things as far as the permitting for the route itself?
I'm going to go to Kurt on that. Kurt, is that who you want, Steve, to answer?
Yep.
Kurt Pearson, go ahead.
The Public Service Commission has completed their hearings. They have completed their open comment period, and they are evaluating all the comments that have come in. And we expect in the next 2 to 3 months to get an opinion from them on our request for a permit.
Does that answer your question, Bob?
Yeah, it does. Just one follow-up then. Did this guy from NDSU participate in any of those hearings, and did he make any of his comments known then?
In the Public Service Commission hearing in Killdeer, an assistant, Mr. Barth, did appear and make some comments at the public service hearing.
All right.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. Guys, if everything goes forward, when's this line built?
We begin construction, I think, in 2016. No, it's completed in 2016. We actually begin construction, if we get the permit, later this year.
Okay, so
it's going to take a while.
We're knocking on the door now, is what
yep.
you're telling me.
And actually, from our power need study, Joel, this needs to be done by 2016, or the winter of 16-17 is going to be
we're
going to
need the power. Let me throw this to you. You've guest host. You've sat in this chair for me when I called you and asked you to do it when you can. The same people that we were talking about today get the same opportunity to do what you did. You're fair with that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we'll let them on, too. And if you have a question then, the phone lines will be open to you just like they were to them.
So, thanks, Joel.